Sam is gone. Dead.
Is that true? Sam is dead. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
No.
Show me death. Get a microscope and show me. Put the cells of a dead body under the lens and show me what death is. Is it anything more than a concept? Where does Sam live? Here. In your heart. And mind. You wake up and think of him. That's where Sam lives. You lie down at night. There he is in your mind. And every night when you go to sleep, if you're not dreaming, that's death. When there's no story, there is no life. You open your eyes in the morning, and the I begins. Life begins. The Sam story begins. Did you miss him before the story began? Nothing lives but a story. And when we meet these stories with understanding, we really begin to live without the suffering. So how do you react when you think that thought?
I feel dead inside. I feel terrible.
Can you see a reason to drop the story? Sam's dead? And I'm not asking you to drop your story, this idea that you hold so dear. We love our old-time religion, even though it doesn't work. We devote ourselves to it, day in, day out, in every culture of the world.
Yes.
Inquiry doesn't have a motive. It doesn't teach philosophy. It's just investigation. So who would you be without the story Sam's dead, even though he's mentally living with you all the time?
He's probably here more now, right now, than he was when he was in his body.
So who would you be without the story?
I'd appreciate the fertilizer, and I'd love being where I am rather than living in the past.
So turn it around.
I'm gone. I'm dead when I go into my story about Sam dying.
Yes.
I really see that now. Are we done?
Yes, sweetheart. And we always begin now. Terrorism in New York City. After the events of September 11, 2001, the media and our political leaders said that America had begun a war against terrorism and that everything had changed. When people came to do the work with me, I found that nothing had changed. People like Emily were frightening themselves with their uninvestigated thoughts, and after they found the terrorists inside them, they could return to their families, to their normal lives in peace. A teacher of fear can't bring peace on earth. We have been trying to do it that way for thousands of years. The person who turns inner violence around, the person who finds peace inside and lives it, is the one who teaches what true peace is. We are waiting for just one teacher. You're the one.
Ever since the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center last Tuesday, I've been terrified that I'll be killed in the subway or in my office building right near Grand Central in the Waldorf. I keep thinking how scarred my sons would be if they lost me. They're only 1 and 4 years old.
Yes, sweetheart. So terrorists could attack you in the subway.
Uh-huh.
Can you absolutely know that that's true?
That it's possible? Or that it will happen?
That it will happen.
I can't know that it will happen, but I do know that it's possible.
And how do you react when you think that thought?
I feel terrified. I already feel sad about my loss, for myself, my husband, and my kids.
And how do you treat people on the subway when you think that thought?
I feel shut down, very shut down.
How do you treat yourself when you think that thought, and you're on the subway?
Well, I try to repress the thought, and I focus a lot on reading and doing what I'm doing. I'm tight.
And where does your mind travel when you're tight and you think that thought as you're reading on the subway?
I just keep picturing my children's faces.
So you're in your children's business. You're reading a book on the subway full of people, and in your mind, you're seeing the faces of your children with you dead.
Yes.
Does this thought bring peace or stress into your life?
Definitely stress.
Who would you be on the subway without that thought? Who would you be if you were incapable of thinking the thought, a terrorist could kill me on the subway?
If I couldn't think the thought, you mean if my mind wouldn't do it? Well, I would be like I was last Monday, before the attack happened.
So you'd be a little more comfortable on the subway than you are?
Much more comfortable. I grew up on the subways. I'm actually quite comfortable on the subway without that thought.
A terrorist can kill me on the subway. How would you turn that around?
I can kill myself on the subway?
Yes. The killing is going on in your mind. The only terrorist on the subway in that moment is you terrifying yourself with your thoughts. What else did you write?
I'm furious at my family, my husband, my parents, all of us live here in New York City, for not helping me make a contingency plan in case the terrorism here gets worse, finding a place where we can all meet outside the city, getting our passports updated, some money out of the bank. I'm furious at them for being so passive, for making me feel crazy, for trying to make a plan.
So, I am furious at my family. Let's just turn that one around. I'm furious?
I'm furious at myself for not helping me make a contingency plan?
Can you see that? Quit being so passive. Get a contingency plan. Not just for you and your children and husband, but for your whole family in New York. Get a plan for everyone.
I'm trying, but they're making me feel like I'm nuts for doing that. I'm angry about that.
Well, apparently they don't need a plan. And they don't want a plan. You're the one who needs a contingency plan. So make a contingency plan for the evacuation of New York.
That sounds so funny.
I know. I find that so often self-realization leaves us only with laughter.
But I'm still angry that they made me feel like a nut.
Can you find it, that part of you that is a nut?
Well, I did do the same thing with Y2K, so I guess they've been through this with me before. I am a bit on the paranoid side.
So they're right according to their world. They have a point. You could work on your contingency plan in peace, not expecting them to want to go.
I'll make my kids go.
Because they're small and you can put them both under your arms and run for it. Buckle them in your car and just drive.
I think I'd better learn how to drive. I don't have a driver's license.
You're angry at your family because they don't have a contingency plan and you don't have a driver's license.
Now that is ridiculous. I can see that. I'm judging them and I can't even drive if I need to. How could I not have seen this?
Now, let's say you have the license and the tunnels and bridges are all closed. You need to get another plan. You need to get 5 more jobs so you can buy a private helicopter.
Okay.
But they wouldn't let those fly either.
No, definitely not.
So there you are. Maybe that's why your family doesn't bother with a contingency plan. They noticed that the tunnels were shut down. Planes weren't allowed in the air last week. There was no way out. Maybe they understand that. Maybe you're the last to know.
That really could be.
So, it just leaves us to find peace from where we are. To make a contingency plan work, from what I've seen of reality, you need to be psychic so you can know ahead of time when to evacuate and where to go to be safe.
Part of me thinks I should get out now. But then, of course, the problem is, where is safe? Talk about needing to be psychic.
So you need to work on your psychic abilities. And from what I've seen, psychics don't win the lottery.
That's true.
So you need a contingency plan, is that true? Can you absolutely know that that's true?
I guess I can't know that that's true anymore. It's kind of a relief.
Oh, honey, just feel it. Maybe that's what your family knows.
I think I'm not such a good planner after all. There's no plan to have.
Of course not. You can't outsmart reality. Where you are right now might be the safest place in the world. We just don't know.
I honestly never thought of that.
So who would you be without the thought, I need a contingency plan?
Less anxious, less on alert, lighter, but also more upset, sad, very, very sad. All those people died. My city changed. There's nothing I can do.
Okay, so that's the reality of it. There's nothing you can do. That's humility. For me, that's a sweet thing.
I'm just so used to being proactive, to making things happen, at least for the people close to me, to protecting them.
And feeling in control. It works for a while. But then reality catches up with us. But if we take all that amazing ability, that proactiveness, and mix it with humility, then that's really something. Then we can be clear and helpful. I need a contingency plan, turn it around.
I don't need a contingency plan.
Feel it. Can you see how that could be just as true? How it could be even truer?
Could be. I can see that it could be truer.
Oh, sweetheart, me too. That's why I'm always so comfortable where I am. When you run in fear, it's square into the wall. Then you look back at where you were, and you see that it was much safer. And without a contingency plan, when something happens, it just comes to you what to do. You can find everything you need to know right where you are. And in reality, you already live that. When you need a pen, you reach over and you take it. If there's not a pen there, you go get one. And that's what it's like in an emergency. Without fear, what to do is just as clear as reaching and picking up a pen. But fear isn't efficient. Fear is blind and death. Let's hear what else you've written.
Okay. I think the terrorists are so ignorant in their hatred and their need to feel powerful. They are so desperate to hurt us, they'd do anything. Why not poison or car bombs? They're evil, ignorant, and yes, they're successful and powerful. They can destroy this country. They're like locusts everywhere, hiding, waiting to hurt us, to disrupt us, kill us.
So these terrorists are evil?
Yes.
Can you absolutely know that that's true?
I think I can know that they are ignorant. They're ignorant about the effects of violence on us.
Can you absolutely know that that's true? That they're ignorant about that? This is a good one, sweetheart. Can you know that they're ignorant about pain and death and suffering?
No, they're not ignorant about that because they've probably experienced it. I can't know that that's true, but I think they probably have. And that's what they're reacting to. But they're still ignorant about the fact that violence never works.
Or they're not ignorant. Maybe they believe a thought that's the opposite of yours. That violence works. That's what they think the whole world has taught them. They are in the grip of that thought.
But it doesn't work, really. To hurt another person, you either have to be ignorant, confused, or a psychopath.
You could be right, and a lot of people would agree with you. But what we're looking at here is not the right or wrong of it. So let's go back to what you read and turn it around.
I think the terrorists are so ignorant in their hatred and their need to feel powerful.
Turn it around.
I am so ignorant in my hatred and my need to feel powerful. That's true. I needed my contingency plan to make me feel powerful.
Yes, and how does it feel to hate?
Well, it does empower me for the moment. I mean, it makes me feel less helpless.
And then what happens when you hate?
I'm stuck. I can't get past it. And it's consuming.
And you have to find a way of defending that position. You have to prove that you're right about your hatred. That it's valid and worthwhile. And how does it feel to live that way? How do you react when you think the thought that they're evil and ignorant?
In the context of what we're saying, it feels pretty false, actually. I'm not sure that I even feel that way anymore.
But from their position, Their hatred is absolutely valid. They're willing to die for it. It's a matter of right. That's what they believe. They're crashing their lives into buildings.
Yes.
Their hatred is no obstacle to them. That's what it's like when we're attached to a concept. And that concept is, you are evil, and I'll die to take you out. It's for the good of the world.
I can see that.
So continue with the turnaround.
I am evil in my ignorance.
Of where these people are coming from. They know the suffering it's going to bring to their families when they kill themselves intentionally.
Okay.
They're not ignorant on one level, and on another level, of course they are, because their thoughts just leave more suffering. So continue to turn around what you wrote after the evil and their ignorance.
They're evil, ignorant, and yes, they're successful and powerful.
And I?
I am evil, ignorant, successful, and powerful?
Yes, and all your righteousness.
Oh, okay. My contingency plan is right, and other people just don't get it.
So let's continue. They're like locusts. Turn it around.
I am like locusts everywhere, hiding, waiting to hurt me, disrupt me, kill me?
Yes.
My thoughts are like locusts.
Exactly. Your uninvestigated thoughts.
Right.
I don't see any terrorists in this moment, except the one you live with. Yourself.
Yes, I see that.
I live in peace, and that's what everyone deserves. We all deserve to end our own terrorism.
I can understand the arrogance of doing what I've been doing.
That's where I see the possibility of change. Otherwise, we're like ancient, primitive beings, all willing to die for a cause.
How are we all willing to die for a cause?
Well, sweetheart, if someone comes after your children, just watch it.
Okay, yes.
I mean, you're even angry with your parents because they won't get a contingency plan. And feel what it feels like to go to war against your own family.
Yes.
What's the matter with them? You would grab them, with them screaming, I just want to be left alone. You grab them and haul them out. To where? For all you know, you move them to the very community that gets hit.
That's true. That's arrogant, too. Crazy, even.
What else did you write?
I don't ever want to see an ash-covered person again as I did that day walking home. I don't ever want to see another face mask or a look of shock. Part of the problem is that the media kept showing images of the towers falling over and over again. I felt like it was happening for a whole week.
Part of the problem was that the media kept showing it over and over. Turn it around.
I kept showing it over and over.
Yes. I want the media to stop. Turn it around.
I want me to stop.
So work on you. Your mind is the media.
I'm not sure how.
You could begin by putting those images in your mind up against inquiry. Because in reality, there's no one in front of you covered with ash right now. It's not happening here except in your mind. Okay? Let's go back and take a look. Describe the ash-covered person in your mind. Describe the one who has most charge for you, the person you actually saw.
Well, the one who has the most charge for me was the man who walked by my office building when I was sitting outside waiting for my husband a couple of hours after the World Trade Center towers fell. I work in Midtown, so the guy had walked more than 60 blocks. We saw a lot of other ash-covered people when we walked home, but this guy was dressed in an expensive, well-fitted business suit, carrying his briefcase, and he was wearing one of those breath masks that you see on television. And he was absolutely gray. His entire head, his suit, his shoes, his briefcase were covered in ash. The ash was untouched. He was like a zombie, just walking, not looking around, He must have been in shock. He had obviously walked all the way from what was the World Trade Center. Everything was sunny, and everything here in Midtown seemed normal, and then this ghost walked by. That hit me harder than any other image that day. It hit me hard. I thought, now it's entering my world. It's here.
Good sweetheart. Now I want to look at it with you. He was like a zombie, is that true?
He certainly looked like it.
Of course he did. Look who's telling the story. The man had his briefcase with him. He thought to take it. Maybe he was simply walking home. There were no subways running. Maybe he wanted to get to his family to let them know he was all right.
Yes.
He was being perfectly intelligent. He had on a breath mask. You didn't. So for all you know, he was doing better than you were.
That could be. I was nowhere near the disaster, sitting there feeling incredibly stressed out and afraid.
The man was like a zombie. How do you react when you think that thought?
I feel horror, as if the world were ending.
And who would you be watching that man without the thought he is like a zombie?
I just think, there's a man covered in ash. I hope he's close to home.
A really smart man, not a zombie. He got out of the building and even remembered his briefcase. What to do came to him in an instant. I don't think he had a contingency plan. If the plane hits, and if I get out, I think I'll pick up my briefcase as a contingency plan and walk home.
He had walked 60 blocks or whatever it was. I guess he was an instant symbol in my mind of what had happened.
Yes, but he could just as easily be a reminder of how efficient you can be when some disaster happens. He had his briefcase. He'd made it for 60 blocks. But how were you doing when you saw him?
I actually felt like I was going into shock.
Yes, he was doing fine. You were like a zombie, and you projected it onto him. If you needed someone in a pinch, and you saw yourself standing there and him standing there, who would you go to for help?
I'd go to him. Amazing, but I'd definitely go to him.
Okay, sweetheart, so gently let's turn it around. I'm willing.
I'm willing to see another ash-covered person.
Yes, even if only in your mind, because you haven't seen anyone since then walking around like that, except inside you. So reality and the story never match. Reality's always kinder. And it's going to be fun to watch how this plays out in your life, especially with your children. They'll learn from you that they don't have to be on guard and have a plan. They'll learn that they'll always know what to do. They'll see that where they are is okay, and anywhere they're going is fine. And without the fearful story, I need a contingency plan, various good moves might come to you. A place to meet up with your husband in case the phones don't work. Learning to drive might be useful as your kids get past the toddler stage. Keeping a few maps and some other things handy in your car. Who knows what a calm mind will come up with.
Thank you, Katie. I see that.
Oh, honey, you're welcome. I love that you don't settle for anything but the pure truth of it. You move totally away from reality when you believe that there is a legitimate reason to suffer. Chapter 13. Questions and Answers. When people ask me questions, I answer them as clearly as I can. I'm glad when they tell me these answers are helpful, but I know that the truly helpful answers are the ones they find by themselves. Question. I feel overwhelmed by the number of judgments I have. How could I ever possibly have time to investigate all my beliefs? Don't worry about undoing all of them Just investigate the belief that's causing you the stress now. There's never more than one. Undo that one. If you really want to know the truth, there is no idea that can't be met with understanding. We're either attaching to our concepts or investigating them. How do I know which one to work with? Here it comes now. One of the things that I understood about the thoughts appearing inside me was that I was someone to be trusted with them. I was the vessel that they could appear in and finally be met with unconditional love. The same thoughts also came to me through my children when they were free to tell me how they felt. They came through every other form of communication. They couldn't come fast enough for me because I knew what to do with them. From my children's mouths or from my mind, I put them on paper and I inquired. I treated them as what they were, visiting friends, neighbors I had misunderstood, who were kind enough to knock on my door again. Everyone is welcome here. Judge your neighbor, write it down, ask four questions, and turn it around, just one at a time. Question. Does freedom always come right after you do the work? It does in its own way, but you may not recognize it, and you may not necessarily notice a change on the particular issue you've written about. For example, you may have written a worksheet on your mother, and the next day you find that your obnoxious neighbor, the one who's been driving you crazy for years, no longer annoys you, that your irritation with her has completely disappeared. Or a week later, you notice that for the first time in your life, you love to cook. It doesn't always happen in one session. I have a friend who did the work on being jealous of her husband because their little boy preferred him to her. She felt a small release after doing the work, but the next morning, while she was in the shower, she felt everything give way and begin to sob, and afterward, all the pain around the situation was gone. Question. What does it mean if I keep needing to do the work on the same thing over and over again? It doesn't matter how often you need to do it. You're either attaching to the nightmare or investigating it. There's no other choice. The issue may come back a dozen times, 100 times. It's always a wonderful opportunity to see what attachments are left and how much deeper you can go. Question. I've done the work many times on the same judgment, and I don't think it's working. You've done the work many times, is that true? Could it be that if the answer you think you're looking for doesn't appear, you simply block anything else? Are you frightened of the answer that might be underneath what you think you know? Is it possible that there's another answer within you that could be as true or truer? When you ask, is it true, for example, you may not really want to know. It could be that you'd rather stay with your statement than dive into the unknown. Blocking means rushing the process and answering with your conscious mind before the gentler polarity of mind. I call it the heart can answer. If you prefer to stay with what you think you know, the question is blocked and can't have its life inside you. Notice if you move into a story before letting yourself fully experience the answer and the feelings that come with it. If your answers begin with, well, yes, but, you're shifting away from inquiry. Do you really want to know the truth? Another possibility is that you're inquiring with a motive. Are you asking the questions to prove that the answer you already have is valid, even though it's painful? Do you want to be right more than you want to know the truth? It's the truth that set me free. Acceptance, peace, and less attachment to a world of suffering are all effects of doing the work. They're not goals. Do the work for the love of freedom, for the love of truth. If you're inquiring with other motives, such as healing the body or solving a problem, your answers may be arising from old motives that never worked for you, and you'll miss the wonder and grace of inquiry. You might also be doing the turnaround too quickly. If you really want to know the truth, Wait for the new answers to surface. Give yourself enough time to let the turnarounds find you. If you choose, make a written list of all the ways that the turnaround applies to you. The turnaround is the re-entry into life, as the truth points you to who you are without your story. It's all done for you. Are you letting the realizations you experience through inquiry live in you? Live the turnarounds. Report your part to others so that you can hear it again and make amends for the sake of your own freedom. This will certainly speed up the process and bring freedom into your life now. Finally, can you really know that inquiry is not working? When the thing you were afraid of happens and you notice that there is little or no stress or fear, that's when you know it's working. Question. When I'm doing the work myself and I sense that I'm blocking inquiry, what can I do? Continue doing the work if you're up for it. I know that if even one small honest answer or turnaround is allowed to surface from inside you, you will enter a world that you don't even know exists. But if your intention is to be right rather than to know the truth, why bother continuing? Just realize that the story you're sticking to is more valuable to you now than your freedom, and that that's okay. Come back to inquiry later. You may not be suffering enough, or you may not really care, even though you think you do. Be gentle with yourself. Life will bring you everything you need. Question. What if my suffering is too intense? Should I still do the work? Suffering is caused by attachment to a deeply embedded belief. It's a state of blind attachment to something that you think is true. In this state, it's very difficult to do the work for the love of truth because you're invested in your story. Your story is your identity, and you do almost anything to prove that it's true. Inquiry into self is the only thing that has the power to penetrate such ancient concepts. Even physical pain isn't real. It's the story of a past always leaving, never arriving. But people don't know that. My grandson, Racy, fell down once when he was 3 years old. He scraped his knee, and there was some blood, and he began to cry. And as he looked up at me, I said, "Sweetheart, are you remembering when you fell down and hurt yourself?" And immediately the crying stopped. That was it. He must have realized for a moment that pain is always in the past. The moment of pain is always gone. It's a remembering of what we think is true, and it projects what no longer exists. I'm not saying that your pain isn't real for you. I know pain, and it hurts. That's why the work is about the end of suffering. If a car runs over your leg, and you're lying in the street, with story after story running through your mind, chances are that if you're new to the work, you're not going to think, "I'm in pain, is it true? Can I absolutely know that it's true?" You're going to scream, "Get the morphine." Then later, when you're in a comfort zone, you can sit down with a pen and paper and do the work. Give yourself the physical medicine and then the other kind of medicine. Eventually, you can lose your other leg and you won't see a problem. If you think there's a problem, your work isn't done. Question. There are thoughts that I feel I shouldn't be thinking, nasty, perverted, and even violent thoughts. Can the work help me to stop having these thoughts? How do you react when you believe that you shouldn't think certain thoughts and you do? Ashamed? Depressed? Now turn it around. You should think them. Doesn't that feel a bit lighter, a bit more honest? Mind wants its freedom, not a straitjacket. When the thoughts come, they aren't meeting an enemy who is opposing them, like a child who comes to her father, hoping that he'll listen. Instead, the father screams at her, "Don't say that. Don't do that. You're wrong. You're bad," and punishes her when she approaches. What kind of father is that? This is the internal violence that keeps you from understanding. I can't meet you as an enemy and not feel separate from you and from myself. So how could I meet a thought within me as an enemy and not feel separate? When I learned to meet my thinking as a friend, I noticed that I could meet every human as a friend. What could you say that hasn't already appeared within me as a thought? The end of the war with myself and my thinking is the end of the war with you. It's so simple. Question. Is inquiry a process of thinking? If it isn't thinking, what is it? Inquiry appears to be a process of thinking, but actually it's a way to undo thinking. Thoughts lose their power over us when we realize that we aren't doing the thinking anyway. Thoughts simply appear in the mind. What if there is no thinker? Are you breathing yourself too? The mind can only find its true nature by thinking. What else is there? How else is it going to find itself? It has to leave clues for itself, and it comes to realize that it has dropped its own breadcrumbs. It has come out of itself, but it hasn't realized that yet. Inquiry is the breadcrumbs that allow it to return to itself. The everything returns to the everything. The nothing returns to the nothing. Question. My answer to, can I absolutely know that it's true, is always no. Is there anything we can know for certain? No. Experience is just perception. It's ever-changing. Even now is the story of a past. By the time we think it or tell it, it's already gone. From the moment we attach to a thought, it becomes our religion, and we keep attempting to prove that it's valid. The harder we try to prove what we can't know is true, the more we experience depression and disappointment. When you ask yourself question one, your mind begins to open. Even to consider that a thought may not be true will let a little light into your mind. If you answer, yes, it's true, then you may want to ask yourself question two. Can you absolutely know that it's true? Some people get very agitated, even angry, when they say, no, I can't absolutely know that. And then I might ask them to just be gentle with themselves and just experience that understanding for a moment. If they sit with their answer, then it does become gentle, and it opens to infinite possibilities, to freedom. It's like stepping out of a narrow, smoky room into open space. Question. How can I do the work if no one around me is doing it? Won't they see me as detached and uncaring? How will my family be able to adjust to my new way of thinking? No one around me was doing the work when I began. I did it alone. And yes, your family might see you as detached and uncaring. As you come to see what isn't true for you, and as you experience question three, how do I react? What do I say and do when I believe that thought? There is such a shift inside you that you may lose the most essential agreements with your family. Charlie should brush his teeth. Is it true? No, not until he does. You have 10 years of proof that he hasn't been brushing his teeth regularly. How do you react? For 10 years, you've gotten angry. You've threatened him. You've given him the look. You've gotten frustrated. You've laid guilt on him. Now the whole family is telling Charlie to brush his teeth, just as you've taught them to do through your example, and you're no longer participating. You're betraying the family religion. When they look to you for consent, you can't give it. So now they may begin to shame you for not shaming him, just the way you taught them to do. Your family is an echo of your own past beliefs. If your truth now is kind, it will run deep and fast within the family and will replace betrayal with a better way. As you continue to find your own way in inquiry, sooner or later your family will come to see as you yourself do. There's no other choice. Your family is a projected image of your thinking. It's your story. Nothing else is possible. Until you love your family without condition, even as they shame Charlie, self-love is not a possibility, and therefore your work is not done. Your family will see you as they see you, and that will leave you to work on them all. How do you see yourself? That's the important question. How do you see them? If I think they need the work, then I need the work. Peace doesn't require two people. It requires only one. It has to be you. The problem begins and ends there. If you want to alienate your friends and family, go around saying, "Is it true?" or turn it around if they're not asking you for help. You may need to do that for a while in order to hear it for yourself. It's uncomfortable to believe that you know more than your friends and to represent yourself as their teacher. Their irritation will lead you deeper into inquiry or deeper into your suffering. Question. What do you mean when you say, "Don't be spiritual, be honest instead"? I mean that it's very painful to pretend yourself beyond your own evolution, to live a lie, any lie. When you act like a teacher, it's usually because you're afraid to be the student. I don't pretend to be fearless. I either am or I'm not. It's no secret to me. Question. How can I learn to forgive someone who hurt me very badly? Judge your enemy. Write it down. Ask for questions. Turn it around. See for yourself that forgiveness means discovering that what you thought happened didn't. Until you can see that there is nothing to forgive, you haven't really forgiven. We're all innocent. We hurt others because we believe our unquestioned thoughts. No one would ever harm another human being unless they were confused. So whenever you suffer, inquire, identify the thoughts you're thinking, write them down, question them, and allow the answers from within to set you free. Be a child. Start from the mind that knows nothing. Take your ignorance all the way to freedom. Question. I've heard you say, when you're perfectly clear, what is what you want. Suppose I save all month to go to a good restaurant so I can eat grilled lemon sole, and the waiter brings me braised ox tongue. What is not what I want. Am I confused? What does it mean to argue with reality? Yes, you're very confused. If you were clear, what you'd want is braised ox tongue, because that's what the waiter brought. This doesn't mean that you have to eat it. How do you react when you think that he shouldn't have brought you braised ox tongue? Until you project that you have to eat it, or that you don't have enough time to reorder, or that you have to pay for what you didn't order, or that there has been any kind of injustice, there's no problem. But when you believe that he shouldn't have brought it, you might become angry at him or feel some form of stress. Who would you be without your story as you face the waiter? Who would you be without the thought that there's not enough time or that the waiter made a mistake? You might be a person loving the moment, loving the apparent mistake. You might even be calm enough to repeat your original order with clarity and amusement. You might say, "I appreciate you, and what I ordered was grilled lemon sole. My time is limited, and if you can't serve me the grilled lemon sole and have me out of here by 8, I'll need to go elsewhere. I prefer to stay here. What do you suggest?" Arguing with reality means arguing with the story of a past. It's already over, and no thinking in the world can change it. The waiter has already brought you the braised ox tongue. There it is, sitting in front of you, staring you in the face. If you think that it shouldn't be there, you're confused, because there it is. The point is, how can you be most effective in this moment, given that what is? Seeing reality clearly doesn't mean that you're going to be passive. Why would you be passive when you can be clear and have a wonderful, sane life? You don't have to eat the braised ox tongue. You don't have to keep from clearly reminding the waiter that you ordered grilled lemon sole. Accepting reality means that you can act in the kindest, most appropriate, and most effective way. Question. What do you mean by "there are no physical problems, only mental ones"? What if I lose my right arm and I'm right-handed? Isn't that a huge problem? How do I know I don't need two arms? I have only one. There's no mistake in the universe. To think in any other way is fearful and hopeless. The story I need two arms is where the suffering begins, because it argues with reality. Without the story, I have everything I need. I'm complete with no right arm. My handwriting may be shaky at first, but it's perfect just the way it is. It will do the job in the way I need to do it, not in the way I thought I needed to do it. Obviously, there needs to be a teacher in this world of how to be happy with one arm and shaky handwriting. Until I'm willing to lose my left arm, too, my work's not done. Question: how can I learn to love myself? You're supposed to love yourself, is that true? How do you treat yourself when you believe the thought that you're supposed to love yourself and you don't? Can you see a reason to drop the story? And I'm not asking you to drop your sacred concept. Who would you be without the story you're supposed to love yourself? What's the direct opposite? You're not supposed to love yourself. Doesn't that feel a little more natural? You're not supposed to love yourself yet. Not until you do. These sacred concepts, these spiritual ideas, always turn into dogma. Question: what do you mean when you say that you are my projection? The world is your perception of it. Inside and outside always match. They're reflections of each other. The world is the mirror image of your mind. If you experience chaos and confusion inside, your external world has to reflect that. You have to see what you believe, because you are the confused thinker looking out and seeing yourself. You are the interpreter of everything. And if you are chaotic, what you hear and see has to be chaos. Even if Jesus, even if the Buddha were standing in front of you, you would hear confused words because confusion would be the listener. You would hear only what you thought he was saying, and you'd start arguing with him the first time your story was threatened. As for my being your projection, how else could I be here? It's not as though I had a choice. I am the story of who you think I am, not who I really am. You see me as old, young, beautiful, ugly, honest, deceitful, caring, uncaring. I am, for you, your uninvestigated story, your own myth. I understand that who you think I am is true for you. I was innocent and gullible also, but only for 43 years, until the moment when I woke up to the way things really are. It's a tree. It's a table. It's a chair. Is it true? Have you stopped to ask yourself? Have you ever become still and listened as you ask you? Who told you it was a tree? Who's the original authority? How did they know? My entire life, my entire identity had been built on the trust and uninquiring innocence of a child. Are you this kind of child? Through this work, your toys and fairy tales are laid aside as you begin to read the book of true knowledge, the book of yourself. People tell me, but Katie, your happiness is all a projection, and I say, yes, and isn't it beautiful? I love living this happy dream. I'm having a wonderful time. If you lived in heaven, would you want it to end? It doesn't end. It can't. That is what's true for me until it's not. If it should change, I always have inquiry. I answer the questions, the truth is realized within me, and the doing meets the undone. The something meets the nothing, and the balance of the two halves, I'm free. Question: you say that the work will leave me less stress without problems, but isn't that irresponsible? What if my 3-year-old is starving? Won't I see her from a position of no stress and think, well, that's reality, and just let her starve? Oh, my sweetheart, love is kind. It doesn't stand still and do nothing when it sees its own need. Do you really think that violent thoughts, such as the ones that come with problems, are necessary to feed a child? If your 3-year-old is starving, feed her, For your sake, how would it feel to provide for a starving child without stress or worry? Wouldn't you be clear about how and where to find the food that is available? And wouldn't you feel elation and gratitude for it? Well, that's how I live my life. I don't need stress to do what I know to do. That's not efficient the way peace and sanity are. Love is action, and in my experience, reality is always kind. Question. How can you say that reality is good? What about war, rape, poverty, violence, and child abuse? Are you condoning them? How could I condone them? I'm not crazy. I simply notice that if I believe they shouldn't exist when they do exist, I suffer. They exist until they don't. Can I just end the war in me? Can I stop raping myself and others with my abusive thoughts? If not, I'm continuing in myself the very thing that I want to end in the world. Sanity doesn't suffer ever. Can you eliminate war everywhere on earth? Through inquiry, you can begin to eliminate it for one human being, you. This is the beginning of the end of war in the world. If life upsets you, good. Judge the war makers on paper, inquire, and turn it around. Do you really want to know the truth? All suffering begins and ends with you. Question. Always accepting reality sounds like never wanting anything. Isn't it more interesting to want things? My experience is that I do want something all the time. It's not only interesting, it's ecstatic. What I want is what is. What I want is what I already have. When I want what I have, thought and action aren't separate. They move as one without conflict. If you find anything lacking, ever, write down your thoughts and inquire. I find that life never falls short and doesn't require a future. Everything I need is always supplied, and I don't have to do anything for it. What do I want specifically? I want to answer your question, because that's what's happening right now. I respond to you, because that's what love does. It's an effect of the original cause, you. I love this life. Why would I want something more or less than what I have, even if it's painful? What I see, where I am, what I smell and taste and feel, it's all so fine. If you loved your life, would you want to change it? There is nothing more exciting than loving what is. Question. You sometimes say, God is everything, God is good. Isn't that just one more belief? God, as I use that word, is another name for what is. I always know God's intention. It's exactly what is in every moment. I don't have to question it anymore. I'm no longer meddling in God's business. It's simple. And from that basis, it's clear that everything is perfect. The last truth, I call it the last judgment, is God is everything, God is good. People who really understand this don't need inquiry. Ultimately, of course, even this isn't true. But if it works for you, I say keep it and have a wonderful life. All so-called truths eventually fall away. Every truth is a distortion of what is. If we investigate, we lose even the last truth. And that state, beyond all truths, is true intimacy. That is God realization. And welcome to the reentry. It's always a beginning. Question. If nothing is true, then why bother? Why go to the dentist? Why treat myself for illness? I go to the dentist because I like to chew. I prefer it when my teeth don't fall out. Silly me. If you're confused, inquire and find what's true for you. Question. How can I live in the now? You do. You just haven't noticed. Only in this moment are we in reality. You and everyone can learn to live in the moment as the moment, to love whatever is in front of you, to love it as you. If you keep doing the work, you will see more and more clearly what you are without a future or past. The miracle of love comes to you in the presence of the uninterpreted moment. If you are mentally somewhere else, you miss real life. But even the now is a concept. Even as the thought completes itself, it's gone, with no proof that it ever existed, other than as a concept that would lead you to believe it existed. And now that one is gone too. Reality is always the story of a past. Before you can grasp it, it's gone. Each of us already has the peaceful mind that we seek. Question. I always find it very hard to tell the truth because it's always changing for me. How can I be consistent in speaking honestly? A human experience is constantly changing, though the place of integrity never moves. I say, let's begin from where we are. Can we just tell the truth as it appears now, without comparing it to what was true a moment ago? Ask me again later, and I may have a different truthful answer. Katie, are you thirsty? No. Katie, are you thirsty? Yes. I always tell what my truth is right now. Yes, no, yes, yes, no. That's the truth. My cousin once called me at 2 a.m, very depressed, and said that he was holding a loaded pistol to his head and that the hammer was cocked. He said that if I didn't give him one good reason why he should stay alive, he would blow his head off. I waited for a long time. I really wanted to give him a reason, and no good reason came to me. I waited and waited with him on the other end of the phone line. Finally, I told him that I couldn't find one, and he burst into tears. This evidently was the truth he needed. He said it was the first time in his life he had ever heard integrity, and that was what he was looking for. If I had concocted some reason because I believed that he shouldn't kill himself, I would have given him less than the only thing I really have to give, which is my truth in the moment. I have noticed that people who do the work for a while get really clear about the truth as they see it. It becomes easy to stand in it and easy to be flexible and change their minds. Being honest in the moment becomes a very comfortable thing. Do you know anyone who hasn't changed his mind? This door was a tree. Then it will be firewood for someone. Then it will return to air and earth. We're all like that, constantly changing. It's simply honest to report that you've changed your mind when you have. When you're afraid of what people will think, if you speak honestly, that's where you become confused. Question. Is it true that I can't hurt another person? It's not possible for me to hurt another person. Please don't try to believe this. It's not true for you until you realize it for yourself. The only person I can hurt is myself. If you ask me point blank for the truth, then I'm going to tell you what I see. I want to give you everything that you ask for. The way you receive my answer is the way you hurt yourself with it, or help yourself with it. I'm just giving you what I've got. But if I think that saying something to you would cause you to hurt your own feelings, I don't say it, unless you tell me that you really want to know. If I think I'm unkind to you, I'm not comfortable within myself. I cause my own suffering, and I stop for my own sake. I take care of myself, and in that, you too are taken care of. My kindness ultimately has nothing to do with you. We're all responsible for our own peace. I could say the most loving words and you might take offense. I understand that. What I realize is that the story you tell yourself about what I say is the only way you can hurt yourself. You're suffering because you didn't ask for questions and turn it around. Question. So many people, so many souls are becoming enlightened now. There seems to be a universal collective hunger for this, a common awakening, as if there is only one organism, one being waking up. Is this your experience too? I don't know anything about that. All I know is that if it hurts, investigate. Enlightenment is just a spiritual concept, just one more thing to seek in a future that never comes. Even the highest truth is just one more concept. For me, the experience is everything, and that's what inquiry reveals. Everything painful is undone now, now, now. If you think you're enlightened, you'll love having your